Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Dana Nelson on behalf of Daniel Giles. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, if I may, please. There are two issues in this case, improper opinion testimony by the state's expert and other suspects' evidence that was wrongly excluded by the court. Issue one concerns opinion testimony by the state's expert, accident reconstructionist Christopher Kern, who testified, in his opinion, it was likely that Mr. Giles was in Patty Berry's car, and
What remedy did defense counsel request that they were not given?
Your Honor, defense counsel did ask for a curative instruction, which was given. Unfortunately, it was not given contemporaneously.
Hold a second. Question was asked, objection on a basis other than mentioning the ruling in limine.
Answer. Your Honor, I do
answer.
Agree.
Answer. Question was asked. Objection on a basis other than mentioning the ruling in limine. Answer. Immediate break. Ms. Coburn comes forward, tells Judge Weiss, the basis for my objection is your ruling in limine. Judge Weiss says that was quite a while ago. We're going to take a break. I'm going to go back, look at my notes. He comes back out and says, you're right. So upon being told that defense counsel was right, what remedy was requested that wasn't given?
Your Honor, first of all, I disagree with your rendition of the facts. What happened was counsel said that Mr. Kern cannot give this opinion because his opinion is based on solely the experts' reports, and the experts themselves were not able to give this level of certainty to the DNA evidence. So there was no foundation for what Mr. Kern testified
to. The objection was foundation.
Correct.
But that did not at all alert Judge Weiss, obviously, that what she was referencing was the ruling in limine.
I think
when he was apprised
of
that, you're going to have to have difficulty hearing me when we're talking at the same time.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
When she was apprised of that, when Judge Weiss was apprised of that by defense counsel, then he immediately made the correct ruling. So given that it happened directly after the testimony, the break, what remedy was requested that was not granted?
Okay, Your Honor, to answer your question first, and then I have a secondary thought I would like to add. The court did give a curative instruction. Your Honor is correct. The problem is it wasn't contemporaneous. The expert was allowed to give his opinion not once but twice about it was likely Mr. Giles was in the car and it was likely he touched Patty's things. Defense counsel objected twice and twice was overruled. There was further testimony. There was a break where the jury was excused. It was not until that point, Your Honor, that the judge came back.
But aren't you now saying the court should have granted a mistrial when one wasn't asked for?
Your Honor, what we're saying is that there are certain circumstances the courts have recognized when juries are not presumed to follow the court's instructions.
So what was the court to do? Had to declare a mistrial, right?
Your Honor, the defense counsel did not ask for that, and what we're saying is that the court's instruction...
Well, it had to declare the mistrial over the objection of defense counsel, right?
Pardon me?
He had to declare a mistrial over the objection of defense counsel. He'd have to declare a mistrial, right? Well, because the jury couldn't be trusted to follow the instruction. So it had to end right there, right? That's your argument.
Okay, then perhaps I should have argued ineffective assistance of counsel for not requesting that mistrial because it is
our
argument.
Well, how do we know that they didn't want to go to the jury? That they weren't looking at juror number 7 and saying, juror number 7's not buying this.
Well, we would argue that it wasn't a legitimate tactic under this circumstance because what this case boiled down to was very complex, lengthy scientific evidence, and the state's expert and the state knew that it was lengthy and complex and that it would be hard for the jury to weigh through, which is why the prosecutor asked these questions, because the prosecutor knew it was necessary to sway the jury. As it turned out, none of the state's experts were able to give this level of certainty to what the DNA evidence said. So by allowing Kern to say that basically what this all added up to was more likely than not, it was Mr. Giles that was in the car and Mr. Giles who touched her things.
So does your position boil down to this? Either the trial court has an obligation to sua sponte, declare a mistrial, or alternatively, we should consider for the first time an oral argument an ineffective assistance of counsel argument?
Your Honor, my argument in the briefing was that it's an opinion on guilt, which this court has reached on several occasions for the first time on appeal. And I'm not saying this was a direct statement on guilt. It was a statement by inference. If Mr. Giles was in the car touching her things, then obviously the inference is that he was the one who also killed her.
But those two statements were not in the record when the jury considered the case. They were stricken. There was a curative instruction given. So only if we accept that those two remedies are ineffective can you be entitled to relief, and the relief would be a new trial. But the other way of saying that is that the judge must declare a mistrial at that time because further proceedings are useless, because the law obviously wouldn't give the defendant the option of betting on the verdict and then getting a get out of jail free card. So the trial judge, to make the ruling, would have to terminate the trial then, even if the defendant, with jeopardy attached, wanted to go to this jury.
Well, I hear what Your Honor is saying, but this is not something that hasn't happened in other cases where the court has looked back in hindsight and said that the curative instruction did not obviate the error, even when there wasn't a request for a mistrial. And I believe that, and I'll have to double check, but State v. Stith and State v. Firth, in those cases, I'm not sure a mistrial was requested, but the court on appeal said, well, this was just so bad that we do not believe that, even though we have this presumption that juries follow instructions, we believe that this error was so bad.
Sure, but we're talking about trial court error. We're in the business of reviewing trial
That's
court
true,
error.
That's true, Your Honor.
So the trial court's error here was not terminating the trial, right?
Correct. That is the trial court error.
Well, what if the trial court terminated the trial and then the defendant pleaded former jeopardy when they tried to arrange for another jury?
There are two issues here. I mean, a defendant also has the right to have a trial by the jury that he chose. And it's
How
not
do we
necessarily
know that
gambling on a verdict to say later that, well, I objected and it was overruled, and then the court gave this posthumous curative instruction that I don't believe cured the effect, but I still
So he not only has the right to go to the jury, but he has the right to not be bound by the jury's decision? Then he's not in jeopardy at all.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think the case law stands for the proposition that every time defense counsel objects that he has to ask for a mistrial in order for the issue to be reviewed. I do not believe that the case
No, but in order for a new trial to be granted. I mean, there were remedies here, and they're very common remedies. The jury's told you can't consider that evidence, and Ms. Coburn participated in the wording.
Your Honor, if I may take one moment,
sure.
I will just say that we did cite to a case out of Connecticut that is obviously not binding but persuasive, and it was analogous circumstances here where a defense counsel's proper and timely objection was overruled, and the court later gave a curative instruction, and the court there said, if anything, this caused jurors to be confused and did not ameliorate the prejudice that ensued from the opinion testimony in that case. And we would ask this court to follow the logic of that case. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Kathleen Weber, and I represent the state of Washington. The issue discussed here this morning is whether or not the court's instruction to the jury to disregard testimony that was erroneously introduced in contravention to a pretrial ruling cured any prejudice to the defendant. The court has also inquired as to whether or not the defense had basically got what it wanted, and in fact it did get what it wanted in this case. It approved the instruction that the court gave in this case. There's a secondary issue that was not briefed by the parties, that's ineffective assistance of counsel, and I just say to the court that if the court is at all interested in that issue, that I'd be happy to provide additional briefing on that as well. With respect to the question of whether or not the instruction in this case cured any potential prejudice regarding error. I think there's a secondary issue that the court has to also or could also consider, which is whether or not this is really a constitutional error, as the defense has argued, or whether or not this is just a violation of the court rules. And to do that, you have to look and determine whether or not it was an improper opinion that invaded the province of the jury. An improper opinion invading the province of the jury is one that essentially tells the jury, in my expert opinion, this defendant is guilty. And those are cases in which the opinion says definitively a particular element of the crime has occurred. And looking at this testimony...
Well, haven't they gone a little further? There's a case where somebody's going out and buying different chemicals and other paraphernalia, and the officer testifies these things are used to make meth, and the court in that case found that that was an impermissible comment on the defendant's guilt.
Right, that's
didn't
Montgomery.
Say he was guilty.
Right, that's Montgomery, but also in that case, these chemicals going out are going, these chemicals that this person bought are used to make meth do go to an element of the offense, do go to a question of whether or not the officer believed that the defendant was purchasing these with intent to manufacture a controlled substance. Montgomery also is instructive in this case because in that case the court gave curative instructions that were even more general than the ones given here. I mean, the one here was very specific to the testimony that the court ruled was improper. It specifically identified the testimony that it was likely that that the defendant was in the victim's vehicle prior to the vehicle being recovered. It wasn't the general, you don't have to accept the testimony of experts, et cetera, type, and you're the sole judges of the credibility of the witnesses, which were the instructions that were given here, but also given in Montgomery, which the court found to be curative. I think looking at the out-of-state case that the defense has cited, also the I think it's called Grenier case from Connecticut, that case is distinguishable from this case as well, because in that case there also was a very confusing curative instruction which identified the testimony of the witnesses but kind of made it meshy as to whether or not the jury could accept it or not accept it. In this particular case, the court specifically said you are required to disregard the testimony that it is likely that the defendant was in the victim's vehicle prior to it being recovered, or that he touched her things prior to them being recovered. And so there's really no question.
And then they watched the do-over.
And then they watched the do-over of the testimony that was ruled permissible.
On the issues that were briefed with regard to other potential killers, the other suspect evidence,
mm-hmm.
There were 11 proposed other suspects. One was, evidence as to one was admitted. Evidence as to 10 were not. 7 of those are no longer at issue. 3 are at issue. What was the difference between the evidence as to the one person that Judge Weiss ruled that it could be admitted, and if you have time, the 3 that are challenged now?
Okay, well, I'm not remembering the one that was admitted.
That was the fellow that was ID'd several years before by one of the witnesses.
Oh, Petticler?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, the reason why any testimony regarding Petticler was admitted is because it was impeachment evidence of the kid that saw the defendant at the car wash about 1:30 in the morning, the morning Patty Berry was killed or disappeared. And it did impeach his testimony because it was a wrong pick. I mean, it was not the person that ultimately was identified as having DNA in the vehicle, was ultimately identified as being familiar with the area and all the other circumstantial evidence that pointed toward Mr. Giles as being the defendant in this case. So that's the distinction. The other people, the court did the analysis that the court has applied for other suspect evidence. Is there a non-speculative link between the person that you want to put forward as the other suspect and the crime in this case. And motive and opportunity are just simply not enough. There has to be some indication that that person took some act toward that motive opportunity to be connected with the crime. I know the defense has argued in the reply brief that some step has been eliminated by Franklin, but quite frankly, it hasn't. Franklin does not change the standard that has been previously set forth and adopted by this court and the Supreme Court since the 30s in the Downs case. In fact, the Franklin case cited Downs and Kwan and all those other cases.
Let me ask you this. If something would be admissible pursuant to rules 401, 402, and 403, is there an additional test that it has to meet as a result of Downs, or is that what Franklin did away with?
So Franklin was a case where the court said the trial court erred because it did not follow the law. And so the short answer to your question is it's more than 401, 402, and 403. It's also the hearsay rules and the other rules of admissibility that bear on that question. The problem in the Franklin case is that, contrary to Holmes, the trial court looked at the strength of the state's case to say, well, no, your other suspect evidence is going to be not admitted because the state has a very strong case against the defendant. It also employed a per se rule, a very high bar. It said, you know, it's higher bar than the rules of evidence. So no, Franklin did not change the prior rule in Downs and Kwan and all the prior cases. It said, no, you have to look at the rules of evidence, you have to look to see if it's admissible, and you have to look to see if there is a non-speculative link between these proposed people or person and the crime.
Is that any more than a relevance requirement under the rules of evidence?
It is, in the sense that if it's not admissible, it can't be used to support the other suspect's evidence. So, for example, if it's hearsay, in this case, they proffered testimony from...
Then you're getting back to still using rules of evidence, just
right.
Different rules of evidence.
Right.
What Judge Dwyer is asking, I think, is do we look just to the rules of evidence to decide if this is admissible, or is there some other test that we apply for this particular category of evidence beyond those that are required by the rules of evidence?
Well, the only other rule is if there's some nexus between a non-speculative nexus. And so I guess to the extent of whether or not speculation, I suppose that would be 403.
We don't normally let people admit speculative evidence
right.
In any instance.
Correct. So although it's not codified, that is another rule that the court would look at, is whether or not it's completely speculative.
Well, if it isn't material,
mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be admitted. Does that have
right.
relevancy? And if it wouldn't be admitted because of another rule, it would have no probative value. So it
right.
wouldn't come in under the other half
right.
of relevancy.
Right.
So is Franklin really saying that this is just informing the application of the evidence rules? It isn't really a separate test out there. It's what you look at to understand how this evidence is applied to the rules of evidence.
Yeah, Franklin did not change the way that we apply the rule. It just was applying the rule in the particular case of that particular case, which was a cyberstalking case, not a murder case. Didn't say that questions of whether or not the person was even in the area at the time are not relevant to the issue. Thank you.
Addressing the other suspects briefly and the question of Franklin, I think that basically what Franklin is saying is that there is relevance if there's a nexus. And a nexus does not have to be established by direct evidence. We're clarifying, the Franklin court is clarifying that chain of circumstances that establishes relevance can be established by circumstantial evidence such as motive, opportunity, ability, and character. And in this case, Mr. Giles presented evidence of all of those factors for the three individuals that we've challenged in this appeal, specifically Officer Beatty, Ms. Berry's boss, Frank Colacurcio, and the patron that she was with that night. And there really is no difference between these people and the person that the court allowed to come in, except that there's a whole lot more evidence pertaining to these three individuals. The only evidence concerning that one other individual is that he was identified from a photo montage from somebody who happened to be at the car wash that night. In contrast,
here we had 11 proffered other suspects. Franklin says that the focus shouldn't be on proving that any one individual person was actually the other perpetrator, but rather whether a reasonable doubt is raised. Does the reasonable doubt have to be as a product of the strength of the evidence, or could it be from jury confusion? In other words, if Judge Weiss had allowed all evidence as to all 11 of the other suspects to come in, and at the end of 20 days of trial instead of 14, the jury sat back there and said, "We just can't sort this out. We can't figure out. So we have reason to doubt because we just don't know what the heck happened. We got 12 people everybody's talking about." Would that meet the Franklin test?
Your Honor, no, I don't agree with that, and that's one of the reasons why I've only raised three of these suspects, Your Honor, because I think the evidence was strong as to them. So thank you.
Thank you. Next up, detention of Ward.